The following is a presentation of the Town of North Hempstead's Project Independence and WCWP. Welcome to Project Independence and you.
Welcome to Senior Talk Radio here at 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. This is Project Independence and you. I'm your host, John Ryan. My co-host today is Otto Loos.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Otto. Otto and I were together at the advisory celebration on Wednesday.
Holiday party,
right. Which was a very wonderful event.
A wild affair.
It really was. I saw some of those people getting down. It was unbelievable. But for all the advisors who participate in Project Independence, and there's six different regions, Christina will tell us more about that later. And actually, there's a very sad thing today. Since we're doing tape shows for the next 2 weeks, the people of North Hempstead will not hear Christina's live voice for almost a month. There's going to be withdrawal in the town of North Hempstead, but we'll talk about that also later.
There's actually counseling being held.
Otto, very good. I love that. And we'll give you that number. 311, you'll be able to get counseling for Christina withdrawal, they call it.
Christina withdrawal.
Now we got to move on to some more serious things. We have with us today Janine Morey, who is the founder of Panoramic Living. And the concept of it is helping maintaining longevity. But you also have a lot of other things. And before we even get into how this came about or anything else, we want to say congratulations, because there was a sneak wedding in Italy.
Yes.
That she was telling us about.
Yes, thank you, John. There was a sneak wedding in Italy. My husband and I eloped back in late September when we were actually on a trip to Greece. We decided to stop in Italy and make it happen.
Terrific. So,
thank you. So, you know, I'm laughing because I think that this will be a quite humorous session as I get to know you. So I'm hoping that between Otto and you, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So thanks for having me.
Terrific, and it will be. How did this all come about? We'll start with this. How did the Panoramic Living come about?
So I've been working in the senior care industry, working in actually the housing portion of the business. I worked for the Bristol Assisted Living. I was the regional director of business development. And for years, I was watching folks in the aging process and, you know, watching their experiences and, you know, who was what I call making longevity happen and where there were struggles and challenges, you know, why. And I became extremely energized and plagued, I guess, in my mind by what was happening with our healthcare crisis. So, you know, watching how many people, you know, are challenged with diabetes. You know, it's like one out of every 10 adults. And then you hit the age of 65, and I believe it's one out of every four. Obesity rates are 70% of our adult population. Cardiovascular disease, one of every three adults are suffering from high blood pressure, causing strokes. And then, you know, there's this whole element of this epidemic of loneliness, where, you know, the younger generation might think we have hundreds and thousands of friends on Facebook. You know, in reality, back in 1970, the average American was saying we had three friends. Now, in our present day, people are saying 1.5 friends. And that's like, why, you know, why is that happening? Why aren't people as connected as we used to be? And a lot is obviously the evolution of how our culture has changed and how, you know, if you think back to the days, the early days of Long Island and how, you know, people were moving out from the suburbs, you know, to more sprawling situations than when they were close-knit in their community in Manhattan. So anyway, you know, it also the rates of dementia have really really been a huge challenge in the population over 85. I mean, one out of two 85-year-olds are suffering from some form of dementia. And so I started to look at all this and I said, oh my gosh, I can't just keep watching this. You know, I need to really do something about it. So what is it? You know, how do we live longer lives? And we're doing that. And we're doing that mostly through pharmaceuticals and medical technology. And, you know, the pharmaceutical industry here in America is like one third of the global pharmaceutical business. So, but how do we do it, you know, with a better quality of life? How do we do it well? How do we live, you know, into our 90s with no problem? So that's where I started to say, step back, got to do something different here.
Yeah, longer is not always better.
No.
No, unfortunately.
It's not actually. I think the average American, right, the average life expectancy of an American right now is 79 years. Well, science tells us that the human body's capacity, so just like the life of a battery, like how long a battery will last, human body capacity is 90 years. So, okay, 79, 90, 11 years, what's going on? And there's most people are living in what I call like a disability zone for almost 4 to 10 years of their life, where they're needing some form of care. So, yeah, it's not auto. It's, you know, we're living longer, but yet we're not doing it better. So how do we do that?
Right. No, I agree with that 100%, unfortunately, with pharmaceuticals and what goes on with people. Not that you're turning around and saying somebody should die. I don't mean it the way it sounds. But you really get into a quality of life, and therefore, if you're fortunate enough to be alive, you have to do your best to try to make, and some of your points there, I mean, you have to be mindful, you have to have connection. I mean, some of your points, are, the social media stuff that we just talked about briefly, it doesn't really impact the senior as much. But I think it's going to be a major situation down the road because I'm not a big Facebook person. I go on every now and then. And people who I hardly know, who I've said yes to, they're talking about the romantic dinner. One once turned around, and I was pathetic. They were at grandma's side as she was taking her last breaths. Now, why is that on Facebook? I mean, and no friend.
No.
If you had a friend, the friend would have had their arm around you at the time by grandma's bedside. That's what the generations to come, I think, are going to be missing without maintaining. At least the generation we're referencing, they have, and especially with Project Independence, they have some degree of community, which is so important.
Yeah, I mean, I see it on Facebook. I'm not anti-social media or any of it. I use the computer all the time. But, you know, you see people, they say they have 300 friends on Facebook. Well, define friend.
Right, right.
You know, if you get down to the real world, you talked about 1.5 friends. If you have a handful of friends, and when you get older, it becomes harder because people die. And good friends and family and whatnot. I think one of the hardest things about getting older is the loss of these people who were close to you, you know, family, friends, whatever, who you used to share memories when you were younger. And they're not, those people are not there to share that with.
I agree.
So you have to build a new, you know, like today is tomorrow's good old days kind of thing, you know.
Right, right, right. And then when one partner dies, that's a whole change in a relationship too. Not for you as a person, but with you and your outside world, because all of a sudden it's like four couples are going. What happens to the fifth person who was a couple at one point, and now it's number nine?
Yes, and that does.
Oh, it happens a lot.
Live with that many times, and it's a major, it's a fact of life.
No, I agree.
These are all things that I think as you get older, what your program is trying to do here is, I think a lot of it is to contend with the fact that, yeah, you may have high blood pressure, you may have this, you may have that, you are going to lose friends, and you have to really learn how to contend with those types of things, I think, instead of going down into a deep hole, which is very easy to do.
Yeah, it's about resiliency and, you know, the way that we bounce back from things that happen in our life. And it's important, like you were mentioning, is how do we go, you know, when we're starting to lose some of our friends, you know, how do we then cultivate new relationships that keep us going?
Right, so. Right.
Which is harder when you get older because, you know, if you're 75, 70, 80, 85 years old, who are you going to cultivate these friends with? You know, you can cultivate some friendship with people like through Project Independence.
Right.
And there are some friendships that do develop, but you have to work at that. You can't just wait for somebody to knock on your door and say, I want to be your friend.
Right.
I don't think it works like that.
Agree, but when you think about your, you know, what you do on a daily basis, your social outreach to the community at large. So, you know, whether you're involved in a faith-based community, you know, whether you go to a senior center each day, or, you know, maybe you visit the library, maybe, you know, you start to, like, as you engage yourself and take the plunge to try new programs and events, all of a sudden there are other people similar to you who are looking for that connection as well. So
right, I agree. You know, you have 5 points, which we'll go over during the course of the interview, but I think the two most significant from my perspective is mindfulness and passionate purpose. Because you can be by yourself, and actually our next guest later on, Milton, who I've never met, I mean, you find a purpose. At any point in your life, you find a purpose. But the most important thing, no matter what my purpose is, I have to live in the now. I can't be worried that 6 months it's going to happen. All I have, all we have, is this moment. If we had gone in 30 seconds, something could blow up and we're all gone. We have
this moment.
That
doesn't happen.
No, but we have this. But if there was no death, you wouldn't pay attention. We have this moment.
So, but mindfulness, and I mean, that mindfulness is exploding in our culture. It's been exploding for the last, you know, at least since the year 2000, but it actually became a movement in the 1970s by a pioneer called Jon Kabat-Zinn. And mindfulness, you know, when people start to think of like, you know, living in the present moment, okay, yeah, I'll live in the present moment. Sometimes it seems a little fluff, but it
just
is
being Jon Kabat-Zinn. Yeah. That's wherever you go, there you are, or something.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Okay.
So it's a it's being able to cultivate the awareness of the present moment. And what is so challenging to all of us is that our minds wander, and our minds wander sometimes up to 75% of the time.
Right.
You know, we get up in the morning, we're having our coffee, and unfortunately most of us are not focusing on drinking our coffee and how wonderful it tastes and our breakfast. We're thinking about every single thing we have to do that day. Maybe we're checking our phones to see what's going on in our schedule, and we're not simply enjoying that moment of our breakfast. And you take that throughout your day and you think about sharing the moments with the people in your lives. And how often do we find, I mean, I was in a restaurant the other day and I just turned over and was looking and I saw this family, lovely family of four out for dinner. Great, they're connecting with each other. And everybody, including mom and dad, were on their cell phones. Right. And I almost wanted to go, ah!
Who were they connecting with?
They were probably talking to each other.
It's like you're not living in the present moment and you're not, you know, appreciating, you know, each other. But there's a lot of different ways to become more mindful, and I think people get a little freaked out about it sometimes. Like, is this going to take like heavy meditation, and do I need to be the Dalai Lama? And what's really interesting is that they're finding that even people who spend 5 minutes a day in a meditative practice, and I say meditative practice because that could be a wide range of things. For some people, it's prayer. You know, for some people, it could be a walk in nature. For some people, it could be, you know, a breathing exercise. There's a variety of different things. You have to figure out what's your right, you know, practice. But what they're finding out is those people are living better. And they're associating it with longevity from a scientific standpoint. I don't know if you've ever heard of, like, on the ends of your DNA, there's telomeres. They're like the shoelaces, the caps on your shoelaces, like the ends of your DNA. Well, these telomeres, as you age, they shrink during the aging process. They're finding that people who are meditating daily, okay, that they're growing, these telomeres. It's related to longevity. So I find that intriguing when something that perhaps people might have thought of, like, you know, I'll be honest here. My dad always thinks when I talk of mindfulness, it's like woo-woo. You know, it's like, oh, what's that woo-woo practice you're doing? You know, you're sitting there quietly. What's going on? You know, but when you relate it to hard scientific-based studies and you can show what it's doing to your brain. I mean, and there's a lot of going on in the world of neurology around mindfulness. So I just, it's an intriguing topic.
It actually, I think there was a big thing on 60 Minutes some time back with Anderson Cooper. And I've heard a follow-up with that after that. And he actually said that it, and he doesn't pay us for this, by the way. but he actually said that it changed his life. That when they had this segment on mindfulness on 60 Minutes, what he went through to learn about it actually changed his life. So just one other thought, too. You talked about meditation, whatever. Like, I'm a walker. I like to walk. And I see people who walk, but they're always plugged into something. And I'm thinking to myself, maybe I ought to do that. And then I think about it, and I say, no, I'm not going to do that. Because when I walk, that's like my meditation. I walk, and I look around, maybe, or I'm thinking about different things. And it's a very mind-clearing proposition for me.
They might be listening to a meditative practice.
That
so
could be.
It could
right.
be like, you know, a meditation that's, you know, just bringing you back, you know. And what I tell people is, you know, this is a great example of like the mind wandering. And, you know, think about when you walk your dog, right? You're walking your dog and your dog might see a squirrel and they start pulling the leash to the other way and you have to kind of pull them back. Well, that's what you're doing with your mind. Is that you're really just pulling your mind, as your mind starts to wander, it's pulling it back. So they might be listening. Most often people are listening maybe to music, but mm-hmm. but hopefully
right,
maybe they're listening to some sort of meditative practice as they're walking, and it's actually a mindful meditation walk that they're taking.
We're going to come back with that thought in 1 second. Now we're going to take a break. You're listening to 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. We'll be right back.